Good morning. Today is the October the 19th, 2016. It's 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners weekly business session. We will all stand. We will say the Pledge of Allegiance. First item on our agenda this morning, item 1A in our administrative actions, approval of the IGA RS 1614 between Josephine County Airports and the Governor's Regional Solutions Office, acting through the Oregon Business Development Department for a grant supporting the environmental determination and detailed engineering design of a second parallel taxiway at the Garrett's Pass Airport.
I know, that's easy for you to say.
Good morning, and before you begin, I would like everyone to know that Mr. Graves was selected as the Airport Manager of the Year yesterday.
Good.
Good job. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
This intergovernmental agreement is between Josephine County and the Infrastructure Finance Authority. We originally received a grant from the Governor's Regional Solutions Transportation Program for about $347,000, and during the interim we've been conducting studies for the environmental assessment or the environmental determination for our second parallel taxiway, and have been told by the FAA that we did not need to get quite as complicated as we had originally planned. So it reduced the cost and brought the cost down to about $282,000 for this initial phase of our project. This is for environmental determination and the detailed engineering design for a second parallel taxiway at the Grants Pass Airport, which is desperately needed. In the interim, the Infrastructure Finance Authority, it is almost an emergency, but not quite that urgent, the Infrastructure Finance Authority has struck an agreement internally with Oregon Business Development Department to take over the administration of the grant, and so they've offered this contract for us for $282,000 because of the urgency of getting the job done and having a detailed design in hand prior to next March. This is a full grant, so we have no matching requirement on this grant, so the potential liability of the county is very limited, and it's I believe it to be a good deal for the county.
Thank you. Yes. Without this IGA with Business Oregon, we would have to wait for the typical appropriation cycle for funding regional solutions, which is ironically 2 years out. They say go forth, submit good projects all around the state. There's 11 different regional solutions organizations, and then they say, well, you're going to have to wait 2 years before you get the money. And in a lot of cases, you know, in 2 years, they'll either find other funding projects, momentum will die. It just seems really strange, and I think that's something the legislature needs to work on, because the premise for funding this, which was a different kind of a project than regional solutions, frankly, in the state has ever kind of funded, was to get the FAA in the queue to say, this needs to happen from a regional perspective. From Josephine and Jackson County's perspective, this is a fundamental project, and they're willing to fund. It was 400 or something originally when we thought, you know, the basic.
Right, about 425,000.
Budget, yeah. And thankfully, you know, over time it's been reduced, but that's the emphasis of the $2 million that was appropriated. They were willing to put out one-fifth to say, no, this project needs to happen, and it needs to happen tomorrow.
Right. And it did work in that way. The FAA saw that the state of Oregon was willing to put some skin in the game and put forward, you know, several hundred thousand dollars to get this work done. And so they actually added the parallel taxiway job to what they call our capital improvement plan for that airport. And it had not been in that plan before this. So it was a fortuitous series of events. I'd like to say I completely planned it all out. You know, 20 chess moves ahead, but it did work out really well for us. So,
for us non-aeronautic-minded individuals, what does this all mean for the airport?
Well, from a practical standpoint, we are impacted at the Grants Pass Airport because all of the land that is accessible via road, Brookside Boulevard, is used up. So it's fully leased, and it's built out. So there's quite a bit of land in the airport itself, almost 400 acres. And none except for the U.S. Forest Service parcel, none of that land along Flaming Road is being used at this time because we have no access to the runway from that side of the airport. So putting in this taxiway will give us complete access to the runway for all of the land along the eastern side of the runway out there. And I've been turning away development for years. People that are ready to build a hangar, they wanted to put out their own private taxi lane to the runway from their new hangar, but that's a safety issue because you wind up having airplanes crossing the runway right in the touchdown zone, which is not a good thing. So this second parallel taxiway will open up quite a bit of growth for commercial and private hangar space, and it will relieve a safety issue that we have currently with aircraft crossing at the 1,000-foot mark on the runway.
Yes. And one other ad-lib here. It's easy for me to understand why the airport managers regard you as the manager of the year. That's a given for all that you have done and what you continue to do for the airports in Josephine County. It's very appreciated.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Yes, I think that I have always believed that airports are an integral part of economic development because there's so many companies that are investing in private jets because they need to be here today and somewhere else tonight and somewhere else tomorrow morning. And we have businesses here that do that kind of business and use our airport, and many more will come.
Yeah.
This is truly one of those build it and they will come because they've been waiting in line for a long time.
Yes, they have. Yeah, we have a couple of businesses at the airport right now. One of them keeps their jet at Medford Airport because they can't use it at Grants Pass Airport. So this is just one stepping stone along the way toward expanding the capability of the airport to serve the needs of this immediate community. It's easy to say, oh, we've got a nice airport 25 miles away over in Medford. You know, they've got a nice long runway, and you know, there's everything you need there. Well, that doesn't do much for all the people who live here and work here and are trying to conduct business here. So, that's what these improvements are doing at both airports.
I would like, before you leave, since this is the first public venue we've had since it's been up and running, is the AWA system. Weather system. So if you would talk about that, too.
Sure. The AWAS, it's another acronym. In a world of acronyms, aviation is full of them. Airport Weather Observation System. And we've had a minimal type of system at the Grants Pass Airport for many years now, perhaps 10. The FAA decertified that system so that it was no longer legal for pilots who are operating on an instrument flight plan to be able to rely on that weather system. One of the first things I did when that happened was make an application for an AWAS and did the research with the FAA, found out what they needed, what their requirements were for a certified system, and then we put that specification together working with our engineering consultant, WH Pacific, to put out a bid. And so that whole process resulted in our newly installed and commissioned AWAS. It's been up and running for about 6 weeks. And pilots are now able to use that information when they're coming into the airport on their approach to make sure that they'll have adequate ceiling and visibility when they arrive at Grants Pass.
Huge safety and another draw for further development. So thank you.
Very much so.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. OK. Okay, item 1B, approval of order number 2016-044 in the matter of declaring county-owned personal property not in use for county purposes as surplus, and report and recommendation. Commissioner Hare.
So unfortunately, I was not in attendance at last week's Thursday admin meeting, and there was an oversight process. Currently, and has been for a little while, the board liaison can declare things in surplus. So historically, we've brought these things to the board, but if we go through the liaison, but I think because it's on the agenda, we ought to go through it. So there's a number of different vehicles, some equipment that has been deemed as surplus, not in use. In most cases, it's either not working or it's at the end of its useful life. I'll use the most extreme example, but consider that these buses are actually built for this kind of mileage. We have a 2006 Ford E450 bus for use in our transit department. It's got 370,000 miles on it. The next highest that I see is 295,000 miles for a Ford F250 pickup, and that was in our Health and Human Services department, so it probably doesn't see the kind of impact that you would get if you had a Ford F250 in our Forestry Department and Public Works. So a lot of these vehicles are pretty much at the end of their useful life, and there's an element that would be prohibitively expensive to getting them repaired to put them back on the road, or they're not exactly reliable. Some of these vehicles are debatable upon whether or not they're at the end of their useful life, and I see that is that they still have a value, a residual value, so it will be captured in the process when these go to auction. The other thing that's available for our process when we dispose of property is that they're available when they're fully depreciated and paid for. They're available to other departments to acquire. And so I can see a couple of these, maybe this 1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee with 140,000 miles that might be used in our Parks Department. We've got a number of volunteers who go around throughout the year and do limited enforcement, but mostly are trying to keep people answer their questions, keep them from doing the wrong thing if they've got a direction in that bent. So we make every effort to try to utilize all of these resources to their fullest and best extent. But that's the list that we have before us. It's A through O, and it was presented to the board last Thursday. It's been on our website since Friday for review. The revenues will be going back into either the respective departments or back into our fleet reserve to be used to purchase more vehicles in the future, kind of a rotation type. So that's the process.
One item of note on here that I asked about last Thursday was the propane tank. Mm-hmm. The propane tank is actually a new tank, but it came with either a lot or a group of materials that we didn't need one and didn't pay for the tank necessarily. It was an extra type of item, and that department doesn't have any use for it. So by putting it out there, any other department could request to transfer that, or it will be, it's actually not an item that has been surplus because it doesn't work or isn't serviceable. It's a new tank, but it has no purpose for us. And apparently it was attached to a piece of equipment that we did purchase. And that was the explanation I had.
Okay.
So when people look at this equipment and somebody says, well, that's new, well, why is the county having something new and they're selling something new? It's because we didn't purchase the tank. It came as a kind of like when you buy something, you throw something extra in just to get rid of it. But it is new, so... they're all in various conditions, and so if you're interested, please look at those. Thank you, Commissioner Hare. Okay, moving on. No further question or comment? Okay, item 1C, approval order number 2016-047 in the matter of uniform procedure for setting fees charged by county and setting a public hearing. These are the animal shelter, the assessor, building safety, community development, parks, public works, sheriff, and surveyor are the ones who have submitted some changes. Some are increases, some are reductions. We have Mr. O'Hara, our finance director, to talk about them.
Good morning, commissioners. This is the beginning of the fee process. We go through this process once a year to update the fees, and as you pointed out, many of them are reductions in fees, and then there are also some increases in fees. We started this process back in September. It's based on an order that was approved and adopted back in March of 2000, approved by the voters in May of 2000, as to the process for setting and establishing new fees and changing fees. So what we have before us today, or what I'm asking for today, is for the board to approve the order establishing the date of the public hearing, so that at that date, then we would have ability to have the public comment on these fees, provide whatever input or discussion items that they have, and then of course the board to discuss those things and approve or change or pull the fee how you see fit. But this is just the beginning of the process. If the board approves the order, then I will publish the date in the local newspaper two times, so that we can give proper notice of the public hearing, and then in November 9th, I believe it is, the public hearing will take place. At this point in time, is there any question? Or
just a couple of points. Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. So all of these proposed fees, either adjustments, are supposed to reflect the cost of service. Some of these I've not seen yet, and I think that's a good point from the standpoint, not that I didn't do my homework, but that this is the first step in many before these are actually approved by the Board of Commissioners and will be adopted. Most of the plan for adoption of these fees will take place for a January adoption, so if you're doing something that might be affected before then, either wait, because actually some of these, I'd say almost a majority, are for a fee reduction. And some of them are going to be for a small fee increase. I say small, but when we have Mr. Hart in the audience over there, he's going to be commenting, I'm sure, on some of the planning fee adjustments. And so I would say that we're not fully resolved on these issues, and it's public comment is a really good thing to have in this. Keep in mind that it's not for a revenue generator for any one of these departments. It's really just supposed to reflect the cost of service. So if you're having comments about this, it's probably relevant to talk about how, for a lot line adjustment, is the fee appropriate for the amount of time that might be necessary. We've adjusted, the one that I thought was pretty interesting that I did review in the planning was the home occupational renewal element, in that the real work is done when you approve the home occupation in the first place. A number of years ago, maybe prior to this board, we adjusted the fee on home occupation permits and made it a tiered element, to where there's a lot of home occupations that are like babysitting situations that really require very little as far as a review. The whole gamut is done all the way up until a landscaping home, kind of, or maybe even an auto repair kind of a style from out of your home. That requires a lot more review from our planning department to say, well, what is the impact based on your zoning and all those kinds of things. So that threshold, that cost is higher. And I think that really reflects what this board has intended, is to really accurately try to get at what the cost of service is. And that, if you're requesting something that's more in-depth, requires more time, you're going to have to pay for that. That's going to be. But if yours is very simple, it should be one-page quick review, then your cost should be very small. So that's our intent, I believe. And also with the parks, those are to be more efficient. So as opposed to trying to collect $86 for Tom Pierce, don't quote me on that price, for Tom Pierce reserving that pavilion, $85 sure makes a whole lot more sense when we're trying to make change, and really a dollar doesn't really make us or break us. So those are some of the nuances of the fees that I have reviewed, but all of these should have been reviewed by the liaison before they come to this process. Not necessarily endorsed, just to start the process going. So I'll put it in, say too much.
I think that's great. I think you brought out a couple things that I could have and probably should have. The other issue, I believe, is that on November 9th, I've contacted all the department managers and requested that they be present at the week, at the public hearing, so that these kinds of questions that come up can be addressed from the department's point of view. These fees also do not reflect any federal or state mandated fees. So these are just the fees that are within our purview.
I think that's an important distinction, that there are certain fees that are non-discretionary at the county level. I think of building and safety is one, and public health, where those fees are really out of our control, and they're set by either state statute or organ administrative rule.
Just for reiteration, we are not permitted to charge $200 for a work that costs us $50 to do. We can't put an inspection fee of $200 on this work that costs $50.
Right. Correct.
The fee reflects
the cost of providing that service.
Right.
Now, I think, for example, animal shelter, just to pick on them for a moment, the fee for issuing a license is, do you just take the cost of that little tag, or the full spectrum of costs of feeding and caring for that animal, and of course, has that animal been there 3 days? Has that animal been there 3 months? So there's a wide variety of costs that you have to capture and then wrap into that fee in order to cover the cost of providing that service. So sometimes, I'm just trying to point out that the idea of saying it only costs $3 to provide create a little tag for the animal, well, yes, $3 for that, but the full spectrum of what that department provides, the full spectrum of service that department provides, and then allocating it among the various services that department provides, that also drives the fee. So, but those are the kind of nuances and specifics that I think the director can more fully address if it becomes.
What I was going to say was that probably one of the some of the biggest changes this year will be in our building safety department, because those fees have not been changed for 9 years, any of them, and so we have been spending down because we have required that many of these departments fund themselves, because we don't have revenues to support them, general fund revenues. So this department has spent down a lot of its reserves. They've depleted it by $1 million in the last 9 years. They've depleted their reserves. So they are to the point at this time that they have to really do something about their fee structure. They're going to spend themselves right out of existence, and this is a required service. Building safety is required by the state, and certain fees are set by the state. The state requires you to collect certain fees, and so I think some of the biggest changes that we see maybe in that department, or at least from my observation and reading through this, is that there's quite a few changes in that department. So I think that if anyone wishes to look at where most of the changes occur, that's likely where you're going to find them this year, because of what has happened over the last 9 years in that department.
Just a couple things. So half of the departments in the proposed 8 are general fund supported. I wouldn't say dependent. The assessor's office gets $60,000 of general fund, and the surveyor gets right around $30,000 to $40,000. So those are pretty low numbers as far as general fund appropriations. The highest would be the assessor's office and the sheriff's office. But those are two very small fee suggestions there. Like Commissioner Walker said, I think the larger ones are in community development, building safety.
Okay. That was my phone.
So, and the other thing for those that are at home, what's being requested of a department when they submit a fee request is listing the current fee, whether there is one or not, cost of service, the proposed fee, and then the current revenue, and then the estimated revenue as a result of that change. Most of those revenue projections are theoretical. That all of that information is provided so that we can evaluate and try to make the best decision. And there's also sometimes comparisons between counties so that we are not outside of our comparators, neighboring counties more often than not. The other element that I forgot to mention, there's so many nuances to these fees, is the non-compete clause, or the aspect that we as a public body, say for charging for RV parks, we're not in the business of trying to undermine the private sector. So from that standpoint, if you have an RV park down the road and they're charging $35 for full hookups and such, it's inappropriate for a publicly funded body to charge $20, say. We should be competitive from that standpoint, that we're not undermining the private sector. Our job is, and our goal is, not to supplant or negatively impact the private sector. So I know that there was a discussion a couple of years ago about charging for, I believe it was like a passport photo or something like that. We were not charging for that, but the guy down the street is charging like $9 or something. They were advocating that we not charge, which made no sense to me. We should be charging at least what they're charging, if not more, so that business is driven to them, so that we're not undermining. So that's the principle behind that. We'll be kind of a comparator as far as charging those kinds of fees when the private sector's out doing something similar.
Right. So, again, this is the beginning of the process. So today is simply establishing the date for the public hearing. And, of course, any of these issues can be brought to the attention of the board, or information requested between now and then, or brought to the public hearing.
And that is an evening meeting. That is 5:30 p.m. It is not 9 a.m. on that date. Yes. Anything?
No, I've said enough, I'm sure.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Hare, I'm very sorry my phone went off while you were talking.
Oh, it happened.
I apologize. That is very embarrassing. Sorry. Okay. We will move on now to requests and comments from citizens. Each person will be given 3 minutes. Please state your name and your address. You do not have to state the number of the street. You can just say that I live in Josephine County or Smith Road or whatever, but we don't need the number. So, all right.
Mr. Walker, if I may, there's some people in the audience who haven't been here before. Just so they understand, this isn't a time for us to go back and forth. So if you have specific questions about anything, we're happy to discuss those maybe afterwards. You can pose those in your 3 minutes, but it won't be necessarily a back and forth exchange. It's really your opportunity to talk uninterrupted.
Okay. We'll start over here. Yes. Mr. Converse.
Brad Converse, Grants Pass. My question is related to the fee process. So in the charter, which I think we all agree our charter might be a little bit outdated, need to be updated, but it hasn't been yet. Section 29.5 and 29.6 address fees, and I won't read them all, but one line is, the intent of this measure is to assure the people that their authority to regulate fees or fee increases through voter approval as defined and prescribed shall not be circumvented. So that's establishing them or increasing them. That's what our charter currently says. We're bound to the charter. I'm curious, and I checked the amendments that we had our attorney look at previously, and I didn't see anything for the 29.5 section saying this is why we're not going to follow that. So as wrong as it may be, I'm curious how we're adhering to the charter during the fee increase process. Right, thank you.
Before other people, go ahead and sit down. To answer that, I'd like to answer that question. Typically we don't, but because other people may have the same question, I know Mr. O'Hare referred to it, but the Josephine County voters approved Measure 1773, and it was dated March 13th, 2000. They approved, the voters approved this on May 16th, 2000, establishing a uniform procedure for setting fee charges in Josephine County in compliance with the Josephine County Charter. So if you would like to check with legal counsel and get a copy of that, it was board order number 2000-25, dated March 13th, 2000, and it did go to the voters on May 16th, 2000, so the voters did approve that change at that time. So anyone that had that same question, that's why I went ahead and answered that particular question. Okay, next person over here. Yes.
Commissioners, Bob Hart, 5126 West Evans Creek. I don't have any opposition to setting the date for the hearing on these fees, but I think some of the things that are in there are a little bit premature or haven't been fully looked at, and I would like you to look at those before we get to that hearing process. One is a proposal to change the appeal fee. It's set by state statute at $250, and the proposal was to change it to $400. Another one is it's very unclear of how pre-apps are going to work now. There's a proposal to eliminate a fee for pre-app, but it's in the RLDC that we're required to have a pre-app. Some of the fees, like property line adjustments that was mentioned by Mr. Hare, like final plats, they're reducing it from $600 to $500. Review process by Jackson County is $84. By Klamath County, it's $175, so it just doesn't seem to be consistent. About the new fee in the planning office for notary, there's no charge now, and it's proposed to be $10, and I don't see that there's a need to compete with the outside notaries, but part of it is to just look at the process. I've handed in some testimony that I think this is a self-inflicted wound because the county is requiring notary signatures on applications that nobody else does. It just doesn't seem to be necessary paperwork, but it's something that is eating up time, and so I think some things need to be looked at, as well as something like forest and farm dwellings. County fee, it's not even addressed in here. Currently, the fee is $2,500. Jackson County charges $1,700, Douglas County is $884, and the standards are set by state statute and by administrative rules, so it's not something that really changes much from county to county. The one big one that I think is something here that you need to look at before it gets to the public hearing is the proposed fee for an annual certification of marijuana compliance. I don't see where the county has the authority to review the OLCC information and whether growers in compliance with the state rules. And the proposal is to assess a $20 a plant fee, with 75% of it going to probation and sheriff's office, and the other 25% is for code enforcement by Josephine County. I don't know that this is a role that the county should be in at this point based on the fee schedule. So I think some of these things are a little bit premature, especially the one about the marijuana inspections and certification. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hart, Mr. Ford. Thank you, Mr. Hart.
Good morning, Commissioners. Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. First, I'd like to say, you know, kudos to Mr. Graves. I know before any of you were on the commission and before he came on board as our airport manager, due to some of the things that were done in the county by certain employees, the FAA was about ready to pull the plug on our airports. We had no cooperation with them at all. That they were so offended by some of the things that were said, like I said, before any of you guys ever got on the board, that it's taken Larry a long time to rebuild those fences. And like you said, Commissioner Walker, I do believe the airports are a vital part of our community, and they need to be updated and rebuilt. And it looks like we're now getting into that point where we can start that process. So sometimes we don't give appreciation and praise to people that deserve it, that work in the county, and do a lot of things behind the scenes, and no one ever hears of it. But those things need to be appreciated and recognized. The second thing is on the fees. I know that I'm on the Parks Board, and we reduced a lot of our fees, and they've made perfect sense. I think a lot of time and effort has went into it. I'm sure all the departments have done that to accurately reflect what, the fees are, so we're not losing money. I do believe, though, in the Planning Commission, we've talked a long time about getting a committee together to look at all the fees and do a good job of accurately reflecting what those costs are. I believe, and Commissioner Hare mentioned, one is the lot line adjustment. It seemed like they're terribly out of. I know we did that a few years ago when my family's property got divided among the kids, the siblings, and we did some lot line adjustment, and the fees, I'm sorry, were outrageous, and they need to be looked at. I think it's time to take, we have a new people in that office now. We need to sit down and take a look at the fees, and we have a whole year to look at them before we do the next adjustment and get them right. Thank you.
Anyone else on this side? Here, anyone wish to speak? All right, I'm going to bring it back to the board.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, thank you for addressing Mr. Conver's question. It comes up every time, and so it's the first line in our board order or the publication. Well, the current board order, 2016-047, talks about that election, and that happens every time. So good question, Mr. Congress. Mr. Hart, you should be credited with packing in a quarter of a page of notes for me in 3 minutes. So well done. Anybody who says they can't get everything they want to say, I don't think you said everything you want to say, but you did a really good job of covering more than enough for us to look at, that's for sure. I think that you raised some really good points. The pre-application process in general has been totally changed since its intent when it was enacted, and I wasn't there. I was probably in high school, honestly, when Mr. Haugen was on the board and kind of tried to get the idea that an applicant who's never done anything before at planning can come in and have a couple of minutes of staff's time to say, look, this is what I want to do. Tell me what I'm supposed to, what is the process going to look like? How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? That was the intent of the pre-application process, as it's been explained to me. And then they assigned a $375 fee. It's kind of like, wait a second, all I want to do is talk about what I want to do. And so I think that's where Ms. Melcher's intent is, to try to kind of get that back to its original intent. And not to say that we're not going to have a pre-application process. You're quite right. It is explained in our RLDC that we need to have that. But it isn't said that we have to charge $375 for that. So I think that's along the lines of what Ms. Smelter's intent in the planning office is, really trying to be a more customer-friendly, trying to she understands that if it's too arduous in that office, people are just going to go do what they want to do without the permits. And that doesn't serve the best interest of the public, as it's intended from the get-go. Planning is supposed to mitigate challenges between different property owners and what they want to do. And I think she understands that, making progress, and that we're going to work with her in refining. I have to give her credit for coming up with creative types of solutions sometimes with that $20 per plant. I don't know if the board's going to be receptive to that kind of an idea, but the fact that, to be honest to the public, there's a lot of economic activity going on around that industry, and there's really no revenue sharing or element of benefit to the county government, not to the economy, that's certainly being benefited, but from an enforcement standpoint of trying to help out neighbors who are legitimately doing marijuana the way it's supposed to be done, permitted by the state and everything. What we're hearing from Commissioner Walker and Ms. Smelter saying that the state isn't going to regulate those who don't have their permits. That's our responsibility. It's like, well, wait a second. That doesn't really add up, because there's no resources to do that. And so, trying to make the best of not a very well we were not included really in how Measure 91 was crafted. Measure 30, legislation 3400 was enacted. There was really little input sought from Josephine County, where we are probably the place where they grow it the most. And so we can chat afterwards. That we're trying to make the best of a not so positive situation as far as county government is concerned. Property line adjustments is certainly something that needs to be taken a look at. I agree, Mr. Hart. I'm not sure why we're requesting a notary signature on an application. We probably don't do that for any other kind of application that I can see within the county. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You are who you are if you're applying for it. And that's really all the justification we need, in my opinion, when we ask for anything else. It's very rare that we ask for a notary, and that would be something I would imagine being filed with the clerk's office, a specific, a legal document to that. But an application, I'm not so sure that that's either required or necessary. We're going to go over these fees and figure out the best way to proceed. And thank you for not opposing setting this timeline, Mr. Hart. But it certainly has the potential to be thoroughly refined before we actually approve this as a board. Mr. Ford, I was assigned to be a liaison to the three departments that have like types of fees assigned to a project, the assessor's planning and public works. We met once and found that there were only a few types of situations where they all are charging a fee that needed to be refined. Mostly the fees are in the planning office, and that's where the refinement needs to happen. Ms. Smeltzer was going to take a first crack at it, which is what we've got here, and I'm going to have to let the rest of the board kind of, you know, hear from her what her mindset is and rationale. And then you mentioned one that is not based on state statute, that the appeals and then the forest and farm dwelling one being similar types of criteria that we're applying here locally. Why is there a disparity between those other three counties? So we'll be working on that.
Yeah, a lot of these things, can't say all of them, each and every one of them, are pardon the expression, like shots across the bow. I mean, these are coming, they're looking at them, these are not the final product thing. Especially with the planning department, because there's so much dynamic that is there. And it needs to be, I think everybody is in agreement, but some of these fees have gotten way out of bounds, and they need to be looked at and revised and brought back into a more realistic situation especially as far as Josephine County is concerned. So these are not set in concrete. They have to go to the planning commission. They have to go to the, the board, and then be looked at and wrangled through before it ever gets the stamp of approval on it. But yet, on the other hand, all that input benefits us, certainly, and helps us look at it. But this is not a final product by any means.
As liaison to planning, I have had discussions with Ms. Smeltzer about fees. And regarding the proposed fees for annual certification of the marijuana grows, as Commissioner Hare mentioned, the state is not going to enforce their own marijuana laws. Ms. Smeltzer has tried to file complaints in regards to illegal grows that were next to parks and other places or 1,000 feet of schools. She's tried to file those complaints herself with the state. And the state has, in effect, said, this is OLCC, has said, not our problem. You have to enforce it. Well, we have a mandate here and no money. So she has been working with the people, a lot of them, in the marijuana industry, saying, what can we do? What would you like to have happen? And one of the things that has come up several times is that those people who are there legally, they have to post, and the little license is about this big, a little card, that they have to post at their grow site. And they said, you know, if there's some way that when the sheriff comes out or a neighbor complains or whatever, if we could say, hey, the county knows we're here, we got our Lux approval, we have our state license, is there something the county can issue that says we're legitimate, we met all our land use requirements? How can we do that? So she came up with this proposal for an annual certification, the money to go to, you know, the public safety and the code enforcement, because those are the ones that are going out on these calls. We have hundreds of these calls. people complaining about the illegal grows. So they're going out there constantly in regards to compliance with fences, dogs loose, people menacing, all these things that are
gunshots.
I mean, all these things that the sheriff's department and code enforcement are having to go out on, and we're not getting any revenue from the state. Basically, we have been told it's your problem. So her solution was said, okay, the people who are legitimate want to be protected. They want to know that they're going to be protected. So a $20 per plant is what she has proposed, whether that's what passes or not, or whether we go forward with it or not, something else, but that's what she's proposed. The $20 per plant fee, then they would get that annually. She would be able to issue a certificate to those people that they could say, hey, we've met the requirements. There's no need for you to be upset. They can show it to their neighbors. They can show it to the sheriff. They can show it to code enforcement. That way, when the sheriff or code enforcement goes out there, they don't have to try to call the state and say, are these people licensed? They don't have to check with planning and say, have they met the planning requirements? Do they have all their LUX and their licensing? Land use.
Compatibility statement.
Yeah, right. Certification. So they don't have to do that. They can have the certification that they can already present so that the law enforcement and planning don't have to make all those calls to verify what's going on that particular property. So that's why she has proposed it. Like I said, this is the beginning of the process. We still have hearings. But I did want to explain that particular one, that it's not something that we have just plucked out of the air to make money. We will not be making money on it. It's to cover some of the costs that the state is saying, your problem. And as we know, we have something like 3,000 grows, and I got the numbers yesterday from planning. There's only 64 that are licensed. So people are complaining about a lot of grows out there, and we have the sheriff making calls and code enforcement making calls. I think she said she had 180 of them or something, so she had to respond to. So, you know, we have to find a way to pay for it. You know, if people want this to be an industry, which voters voted in Measure 91, not in this county, but throughout the state, so we have to deal with it. And this is the way she's trying to find a way to deal with it. So let's at least consider what the proposal is, because we do have issues that we need to address. So one last
comment. So Ms. Schmelzer is a new director for Josephine County. She's in charge of a new department that's a consolidation of building safety, planning, and economic development. And when she came on board, I think she expected to have more time to go through and develop a process for fees and such. And we have a really unique fee approval process. I don't know that there's another county that goes through this extensive of a process. Usually the boards can make those determinations, but our charter precludes us from doing that, and the measure that order previous approved by the voters gives us this opportunity to do this. So she was looking at a different timeline. So if there's if this proposal's out of her planning office are less refined than they than we'd like them to be, it's because she didn't expect for her to have to go through and meet this timeline. I know that was my conversation or the board's conversation. She was making a presentation saying, well, I'm going to be looking at these fee proposals, looking to implement those in the spring and such. And it was like, no, we do our fee schedules in the fall for implementation in January 1, and you're going to have to, you know, step it up and kind of conform to the way we do things here. We do only emergency adjustments, things that we somehow got wrong or missed in a June process for implementation July 1. But we rarely do that. That's just the other opportunity. We really are only allowed, I think by state statute, to do a fee adjustments twice a year. We try to do them only once. So that's one of the reasons why if I'm not as familiar with her proposal as I think Commissioner Walker's liaison is, and it may not have been refined as much because of that new manager not knowing the timeline. So it could be adjusted.
The other thing I would like to suggest is that Mr. Hart brought up several points, but others here may have the same thing. If you have any, you know, we're setting a hearing. If you have any suggestions or recommendations, I recommend that you put those in writing, and then at that hearing you can submit them for consideration, and that way we would have them all at that time so that we can consider them, because there will be a second hearing. Just one, there will be two, so we could make changes between those two hearings. So if that's what you would like to do, we certainly would welcome those in writing so that we can consider. It's easier than, you know, verbal to have something in writing so that you can compare, well, what is the common issue, what suggestions do people have, and we can reconcile those and work with them. So I'd like to see that. Would the rest of the board like to see that?
Well, I'd like to make sure that we have two hearings on this.
I think we do, don't we?
Not an ordinance. It's just approval of an order. So I think there's only one hearing. So your formal opportunity would be November 9th.
Okay.
And usually we make an adjustment either that night, which we can do, or we can put the hearing for adoption off to a later date if there's something significant, which we usually can do. We have to have it done before 30 days. So that would be, you know, like the end of November before January implementation. So I think we only have one
hearing. Mr. O'Hare, do we only have one?
Yeah.
Okay, that was my mistake. Sorry.
Ordinance is required.
Okay, sorry. I thought we had to have one on this one as well. My apology.
So I would suggest written comments are great.
Yeah.
But do them in advance of
November. Yeah, let's do them in advance since we have one hearing. So get them to us. Don't wait for them. That way we can consider them at the hearing and make changes that night. I apologize. I thought it was two. Thank you, Mr. Hare and Commissioner Hare. Commissioner Hare. This has been really tough. Commissioner Heck and a Commissioner Hare. So close. Okay. Any other comment before we move on? Okay. All right. I will entertain a motion on item 1A, which is the approval of the IGA. RS 1614 between Josephine County Airports and the Governor's Regional Solutions Office.
And Madam Chair, I will happily move for approval of IGA RS 1614 between Josephine County Airport and the Governor's Regional Solutions Office, acting through the Oregon Business Development Department, for a grant supporting the environmental determination and detailed engineering design of a second parallel taxiway at the Grants Pass Airport.
Second that.
Okay. Any further discussion?
No. Thank you, Mr. Graves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Other than just kudos for Mr. Graves, appreciate what you have done, but what you continue to do, and the projection of what we can look forward to in the future because of what you've established and what we have coming down the pike yet. So appreciate all that.
Thank you. Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 1B, approval of order number 2016-044. In the matter of declaring county-owned personal property not in use for county purposes as surplus and report and recommendation.
Well, I'd move for approval of 1B as you have read.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? Being none, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 1C, approval of order number 2016-047 in the matter of uniform procedure for setting fees charged by the county and setting a public hearing.
You want to continue that?
Okay, I'll finish reading. Proposals from the animal shelter, assessor, building safety, community development, parks, public works, sheriff, and surveyor.
I will make that motion to approve. Item 1C.
Second.
Okay. And again, for clarification, to make sure everyone here is that if you have any suggestions or recommendations in regard to the fee schedule, please submit those to us prior to that hearing, as it will be the only hearing, which will be November 9th at 5:30 p.m. right here. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Being none, roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Moving on. Excuse me. Moving on to item 3, the consent calendar. 3A, we have minutes. The weekly business session, September 28th. Executive session, September 28th. County administration workshop, September 29th. General discussion, October 4th. Weekly business session, October 5th. Executive session, October 5th. County Administration Workshop, October 6th, 2016. General Discussion, October 6th also. Item 3B is Resolution Number 2016-064 in the matter of a reappointment to the Josephine County Parks Advisory Board. Commissioner Hare?
Yes, this is a reappointment of Diana Horler. She's been on the board since I've been on the board, so for quite some time. She's a true asset to the Parks Advisory Board that does a lot of work for Josephine County that's behind the scenes. And her tenure, to say something positive, but everybody's credited with this. When I came on board 6 years ago, the Parks was operating with a three-year annual deficit exceeding, $250,000 in the hole. And since then, I think they ended last year in the black, probably 106 to the good. So it's been a struggle. It hasn't been easy. And they've made really good progress, and Diana's a really big part of that.
And item 3C, resolution number 2016-065, in the matter of reappointment to the Josephine County Mental Health Advisory Board. Commissioner Heck.
And if you will loan me your laptop, I will not use my frisbee here. I'm about ready to throw that thing out the window. Oh, Gail Renius. Yes, Gail Renius is the appointment. And also, handwriting is DD.
Well, that's who she's representing.
Oh, she's right, DD Services.
Development.
And she's been on the board. This is a reappointment for her. She's a very integral part of the Mental Health Advisory Board.
And it's reappointment, so they're very familiar with what the issues are in our county. So, okay. All right. Do I have a motion to
Madam
approve?
Chair,
consent calendar?
I'd move for approval of the consent calendar item A, B, and C.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion and second. Any further discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, any other business from the board at this time?
No.
No, any other matters from commission?
I'd just like to thank those in the public who aren't typically here. Really appreciate that there's people who are interested in county government, how we work and what we do. I think last week, unfortunately, our evening meeting, we only had one constituent there. And so the whole premise of having a 5:30 meeting out of the norm, charter-wise, we're supposed to, if there's a quorum of the board, meet at least once in a public fashion and hear public testimony. So feel free to come. And this isn't the only opportunity. A lot of people get nervous, standing out in front of everybody. This is televised, but you can schedule an appointment with any one of the board members. Or if you have an issue of countywide concern, you can bring it to the board, and we can schedule you for a general discussion where it'll be a little less formal and an opportunity to exchange back and forth. And you wouldn't be limited to your 3 minutes, but it's got to be of that threshold where it's of community interest. So if there's something that you felt frustrated about today that you didn't quite get done, either meet with us individually or you can follow up with either our managers or ourselves. So if it's a policy decision making, it might make more sense to just come to the board. That's kind of why we're here, to guide and be that liaison between the public and our managers. My philosophy is that the managers work for the Board of Commissioners like any other corporation, but the Board of Commissioners and all other elected officials work for the public at large. So that's kind of how the system ought to work best, in my opinion. And, I think we're privileged to have really good managers. I'm honored to be one of the members of the board who hired Mr. Graves years ago. And he's blessed, like many of our managers, who inherited a backlog of projects that was probably 6 years deep. So I think he's kind of at a point where he's able to pull his head up and say, wow, I've just resurrected a department that was frankly floundering and on the brink of really not being very, very much of a contributor to Josephine County, and now it's a vital part of our local economy, and it's only growing so. I think the statewide recognition of his peers is something we've understood for years, and he's done an excellent job. One of the reasons I think he was probably chosen as Airport Manager and Organ of the Year is because, unlike a lot of areas that I've seen, either Roseburg, Redmond, Madras, we have limited resources that we can contribute, even to do the match. If you look at his project schedule for the next couple of years, he's got in the queue maybe $7 million worth of projects easily. I'd say that Eastside Taxiway is 2.1 and change. They often start out at some number and grow from there. They rarely are reduced. And we're going to struggle. We already do. with coming up with maybe that 10% match to cover our local contribution to make those projects happen. Without them, as Mr. Graves and Ms. Walker said, that business goes somewhere else. It's not as though it just doesn't exist. It'll just go to a different economy. And as much as we are kind of a regional economy with Jackson County, because just as many people apparently come over from Jackson County to work every day is the number of people that go over to Jackson County and work. I find that incredibly ironic. I would not have expected that, given our different population levels. But we really want to grow and keep up our part. But according to Mr. Graves, we've got as many or more privately held aircraft at the Merlin Josephine County Airport at the north end of town as they do in Jackson County. Medford Airport. And so, I mean, I think it's one of those things that goes under the radar that people really don't recognize. But that's a significant element in our community and our economy. And we shouldn't forget the Illinois Valley Airport that's had tremendous successes over the years and under the leadership of Mr. Graves and that Airport Advisory Committee. The one thing that I will end with is all of these programs have suffered significant reductions in resources, and it's really been the only reason that I think they have survived and thrived the way they have is because of the volunteers that have come forward, the community partners that are constantly there contributing to events like airport days and parks events. They step up for little or no thanks at all and really make this community what it is. So they're the real unsung heroes in all of this, and it's only for through good managers that work tirelessly. I mean, I think of our parks director, Sarah Wright, who comes in here and has really never been a director before, but has taken that bull by the horns, and she doesn't know the word no, and sometimes that gets her kind of in trouble. But I'd rather, you know, have working with that with somebody who wants to do the world than is just satisfied with mediocrity. And I don't think Larry or Sarah or any of our managers are ever going to really be satisfied, and that's what encourages me and inspires me every day to kind of keep at it, work on projects like that Regional Solutions Grant. We got statewide attention, may not have been positive at first, from submitting a grant request for funding an FAA project, but it happened exactly how Mr. Graves wanted it to happen, and I think that's a positive thing for getting us notoriety, that when we say we're going to do something here, it's going to work out. You know, we're no longer just going to drop the ball halfway through the game, like Oregon State sometimes does. We're gonna carry it through, and that's really key for building momentum and success in the future. So,
you are an Oregon State grad.
I am.
Okay, just clarifying.
It's every week. It's very humbling, except for 2 weeks ago, 23 months. That was pretty awesome. It felt like the teams kind of switched and were wearing different uniforms, especially U of O wearing those blue uniforms. I'm like, who are they? They're playing like Oregon State, but they're not wearing either team's colors. It just, yeah.
They're trying to fool you.
Okay, on to another topic. Last night I had the opportunity to go down to Williams, at a Williams Community Action Council town meeting. And they must have had close to 80, 85 people at the Williams Grange. And they had four agenda items, and it had basically all three of them had to do with the marijuana issue. And one of the applicants was a grower there, medical marijuana grower, who was trying to enlarge the business and go into the recreational side, and also wanted to open up a processing facility. And it was a very, very interesting display of democracy at work. It, as you can well imagine, when you have a community that lives together in a very close environment, and somebody has stepped a little beyond what they perceive as the line, and it never got loud, nasty. There was a couple times that there was a little steam rising, but they moderated it well. They had to take a break and take a deep breath and let's continue on. And it really was handled marvelously well. It was a very good demonstration of how a community group or any group of people can meet together over very, very difficult issues and talk through and arrive at a conclusion. Might not everybody agreed with, but yet on the other hand, it was decided and it was acted on and everybody went home with a sense of peace. And it was very, very encouraging to me. The processing individual that had wanted to have that developed, he withdrew his application, and he will be moving that to another area if he's going to continue it at all. But he realized that the community of Williams was not supportive of that kind of a work being done in Williams. And it was a marvelous demonstration to me, a 2.5-hour demonstration, but it was really very, very good that we can talk about issues that are very, very contentious, but yet do it civilly, respectfully, and arrive at a conclusion that not everybody is going to agree with, but everybody agrees that it is a conclusion. And their neighbors, their friends, they go to school together, their children play together, and they realize that was worth more than just getting their particular way on an issue. So it was very enjoyable in one sense to see the way that worked out, and I had a tremendous amount of respect as I came home from Williams last night.
Thank you. I would like to say that part of what went into, I think, the consideration of Mr. Graves' success, other than just getting the grants and the taxiway, because he has started the airport days, I think this is the fourth year, third or fourth year, always the first weekend in September. Huge success, wonderful demonstrations, great family day out there, and had good weather every year so far. It stays that way. But the other thing is that this last year, he's talked about it many, many times, but this last year he started in cooperation with Rogue Community College, a science, technology, engineering, and math program geared to aviation for junior high kids in the summer, like a summer camp. And that went over really well. They were going to have it for 1 week, and they had so much demand. They had it for 2 weeks. They still had more of the demand. I think next year it might be expanding. I don't know. But I think that's going to expand because there's a lot of children here in our area that are interested in aviation careers, and this is a perfect opportunity for them to find out more about how to fly and aviation careers. So thank you to Mr. Graves for starting those two aviation-related events in our community, particularly the one for the children in the science, technology, engineering, and math. So that's a really good thing. And I would like to address another issue that Mr. Converse brought up in regards to not knowing about the passage of that additional measure on fees. That has been an issue, not just that one, but being able to find things in the county. We've had this, what we call the codification project, and it is very complicated. It has been going on since the first year I was here, when we first started it. So it's been going on. And we anticipate the completion of it sometime in the next couple of months. I've been told that by legal department, because the company that was contracted to codify or put together all of the orders and ordinances and all of the rules that we have in the county, so they would be in one place so that people can refer to them, and so that we ourselves as a governing body and so the heads of our departments can find conflicts in those codes and rules so that we can fix them. And right now, the final draft had come back to our legal department, and they are reviewing that right now before they go into the final document to be approved. So we recognize that that's an issue. That isn't the first time this has happened, where people come in not knowing, and it's like sometimes we can't find them. We know something is there, but we can't find it. So fortunately, we have an individual in our legal department that's been here long enough that she typically can find everything for us, but that's not a good way to operate because it doesn't serve the public. So we're hoping that we can have this finished within the next couple of months, 2 to 3 months, so that we can get that all put in one area. It can go online. People can look for it. When we find conflicts in it, we can fix them. So thank goodness we're doing that. It's finally going to come to fruition. If it was there the first year you're there, that's what, 7 years now?
Six years.
Okay. Okay, but it is a difficult project anytime you're talking about legal things, because not only do they have to cross-reference with what we have, they have to cross-reference with state law. So it's all legal cross-referencing. It's a very complex process. So
just we're one of the last, we may be the only county in the state of Oregon that doesn't have our code codified. Not all codes are online. Ours will be. And the next board, once we inherit that codified code, will probably be responsible for repealing more ordinances than any other board prior, just because there's outdated elements that are not consistent with state law. I don't want people thinking that there's a codification with our charter, and that's something that's different.
A different issue.
That our code is not necessarily specifically tied to our charter. They're two separate documents. There should be some comparison. It'll certainly be easier to compare a codified code with a charter, so it'll be a step in the right direction. The next step for that is a charter review committee, which Mr. Converse has volunteered to. I'm just kidding. There you go. Done. Delegation of authority. Go.
Careful, you come here, we'll get you volunteered, right?
It certainly needs updating. You're right.
Thank you. Okay. I also want to reiterate our thanks for having people here, new people here today. It's always nice to see you, because this is, as I said, our weekly business session. We meet on Thursdays, where we go over the issues that have been brought to us and those that have occurred, to discuss them on Thursday. That is a public meeting over in the courthouse in our conference room. You're welcome to attend. We don't take public testimony at that time, but you're certainly welcome to attend to hear the background discussions on these agenda items that we bring forward on Wednesday. Not everything that we talk about on Thursday comes forward onto the next Wednesday, but typically most of it does. But if there's other issues that come up, we don't move them forward. And then your opportunity to speak publicly is here. As mentioned earlier, you can speak to any one of us at any time. Just call, make an appointment, and we'd be glad to meet with you. And as a reminder, any comments on the fees, please get those to us before the November 9th hearing so that we can review them. So, any other comments? Okay. It is 10:12 a.m. and we are adjourned.